You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Don't you see? It's so simple. Step one, we Google the biggest flops on Broadway. Step two, we find the crazy stories behind them. Step three, we see how they lose millions of dollars.
Millions?
Broadway isn't cheap. A lot of fancy people want to be producers. Step four, find out why the show won't go on. Step five, end this episode and head to Times Square.
Times Square? That'll never work. Only Broadway successes are in Times Square.
Oh, ye of little faith.
Welcome!
What's up, Theater Geeks?
You have reached our very first intermission episode of Theater Geeks Anonymous.
We're very excited. It's our mini-sode. These will be about 15 minutes.
Yep.
So,
or more if we feel talkative. It's going to be bad. They're going to be like an hour and we can't call them mini episodes anymore.
All right. So on this episode, we have three distinct parts.
Yes.
The first part we are calling rewrites.
Yes, rewrites. That's like corrections.
And omissions.
Omissions. Like anything that we might have messed up in an episode and then we're like made aware of or that we discovered on our own. And in this case, Ebony discovered on her own, ladies and gentlemen, something that she found more information on, I guess.
Yeah. So when we recorded the Annie episodes.
Would that be Annie 2, Miss Hannigan's Revenge?
We actually called it Annie 2, Miss Hannigan's Revenges.
Oh, that's right.
Because there were two sequels that we talked about. So afterwards, we had received the book Not Since Carrie. And so when I was reading Not Since Carrie about the Annie episodes, there was a little bit more information. So I just want to share that little bit of information with you from the book. And it's to clarify the changes in plot that were made from the time script was originally written. If you remember, they thought that it was done and ready to go as soon as they finished writing the original book. But of course it wasn't. And so when they went to DC and they had all these problems, they decided to make some changes. So I'm just going to go over the actual changes because I didn't really clarify them too well. And also there was a little issue with the name of the ex-con that was Miss Hannigan's partner.
Oh, yeah, totally. I do.
Okay, so the ex-con that was Miss Hannigan's partner, his name was Lionel McCoy, and he was played by Ronnie Graham.
Okay.
So the changes that were made were, and I'm just going to read this directly from the book. The opening scene in the House of Detention had been dropped, along with Miss Hannigan's first song. Warbucks had now sent Hannigan off to Australia to punish her, and she now jumped ship and took refuge on McCoy's tugboat. So this is different than her, like, than the show opening up.
She didn't break out of prison.
Detention. Right.
Wait, though, I mean, I know he's a millionaire, billionaire, zillionaire, right. Fafillionaire, but can he really send her on a ship to Australia?
No.
No, I don't think so either.
I mean, he does know FDR, though, right?
Oh, that's true.
So I guess he can do a lot of
things. He can send anyone he wants to Australia.
Anywhere
he wants. But Australia's like, we got your package. We don't like it.
We don't like it.
Wait, let me try to do an Australian accent. It's going to be terrible. And we don't like this. That's terrible.
All the Australians listening are like, and done. So we lost our whole
Please don't be done.
Maybe my one friend Patty listens to this and she's like, no.
We've gotten way off topic.
Okay.
Sorry, Australia. Let's get back to Annie.
We're sorry. Apologies. A line of orphans vital to the spirit of the original was added. I did talk about that and say that there were orphans.
Yeah, because like I wanted to know where Duffy and Pepper and Molly.
But there wasn't time to give them much to do.
Okay. Well, yeah.
The scene in Yankee Stadium was where Mr. or Daddy Warbucks had met up with all of the women, the eligible women, to be
okay.
his wife.
Okay.
So the scene in Yankee Stadium was moved to a hotel room, which not awkward at all.
Maybe it was a ballroom.
It says hotel room.
Like
I don't know.
A meeting room?
I don't
know. Mm. Sketchy. A large suite. Penthouse suite.
I hope. I don't know.
I don't either.
And the opening of Act Two in the original book, When You Smile, was Annie cheering up FDR. When in the rewrites, they moved it from Wall Street cheering up FDR to Yankee Stadium with Annie cheering up Babe Ruth.
Okay. It kind of just sounds like they made a little more convoluted.
Yeah, doesn't it? An attempt was made to make Annie more than just a prop by giving her new songs. Hannigan no longer intended to kill Annie, only to send her away.
Okay.
McCoy was no longer Hannigan's love interest, but just her accomplice.
Okay.
And he lost his duet with Hannigan, and Hannigan no longer masqueraded as a Southern belle, disguised herself as the dead serious Frances Riley, a hard knock lady from Connecticut. Okay, so this ended up in Annie Warbucks in a way.
Oh, okay.
Because in Annie Warbucks, Miss Hannigan's completely eliminated, and you just have a woman.
Oh, yeah.
Remember? Mm-hmm. She's like the daughter of the woman who's trying to take down Daddy Warbucks.
Mm-hmm.
So this bit did make it to Annie Warbucks. There's just one character dedicated to her the entire time.
Yeah, they cut out the middleman.
Right, so Miss Hannigan's gone.
Okay.
Excuse me. Hannigan as Riley was given a grim new showstopper called But You Go On, which again was kept for Annie Warbucks. And she sings about the horrors of her life.
Right.
The decision to change Hannigan's impersonation from the giddy O'Hara to the tragic Riley meant that Loudon was deprived of her virtually all of the opportunities for the kind of comedy at which she excels.
Yeah.
So it doesn't seem like the change is really... I mean, doesn't seem like. We know the changes didn't help.
No, they didn't help.
And especially
for either production.
No. And especially when you have somebody like Dorothy Loudon, who's known for being a comic genius, and mm-hmm. you don't let her be the genius that she is.
You know what? It's so hard, though, because you know that you've got a show that is not working, and so you need to make changes. But the changes that you want to make... are going to have to make compromises with the people that you have.
Right.
So you either look at your cast and you're like, well, should we keep... I mean, if it had remained Annie 2, Miss Hannigan's Revenge,
right.
then obviously they would have said, well, Dorothy has to still be Miss Hannigan.
Right.
And will maintain her comedy prowess for the through line.
Right.
But... they couldn't really do that because now it really is about Annie Warbucks and the biggest part of Annie Warbucks besides Annie is Daddy Warbucks and Grace. So, you know,
what you're saying is accurate.
Yeah.
And I think that's why in the end they just ended up having Annie Warbucks because,
you know, and I will say at some point, if you're in a spot, if you're in a troublesome area with a show, the best thing to do is walk away from it and then come back at a later date.
Right.
Because the more you try to work on it, the more you try to fix it, I think the worse it gets. Because you're just too close to the project. You cannot see it for what it is.
I have a friend who is a painter, and she had this project she had been working on for 9 months. And there was one piece of it she just couldn't get right. And she was trying all these different mediums and it wasn't coming together. And then one day she accidentally spilled black paint all over the painting. I mean, ultimately this painting ended up taking her about 2 years to finish.
Oh my gosh.
But it was just absolutely devastating. But when she restarted the painting... and looked at it with fresh eyes, it came together so much easier than the first time.
Yeah.
Okay, so part two, we are calling the Diva's Dressing Room.
Diva's Dressing Room!
I love that.
Thank you.
That should be every time.
Okay, done.
And this idea actually came out of a Facebook Live that we had, where someone suggested that, like, whenever we did... an intermission episode, we were trying to figure out like some things we should do, and they said you should do like a Divas Corner, And so
was that my sister, Jennifer?
I think so.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks, Jennifer. I don't even know if she listens, but she will. She knows what's good for her.
But her idea, which we probably will do in the future, is like any mishaps, you know, things that happen. For example, like recently Glenn Close, when she was doing Sunset Boulevard a few weeks ago, somebody was taking pictures of her while she was on stage. And she looked at them and she said, okay, well, I'm going to stop until, you know, you're done with your paparazzi pictures. And then... go ahead and finish the show.
Mm-hmm.
That's what she said on stage.
She's amazing. There is, I think, yeah. Is it a video or is it audio? Because I've watched it or
I don't know.
Or
I haven't. Oh. I only read about it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think there's a video attached. Maybe I'm just making it up. And maybe it was like complete imagination in my own mind. But it was incredible to read about it or to see it or to watch. I don't know. But she went right back into the song and started right where she left off and just went through. And the audience loves that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
because it's, you know what? I loved it as a performer. I loved it when something went wrong, because once you got everything figured out again, the audience was with you.
Mm-hmm.
Like if they left, great, because the people that stayed are there. And it's a story that you can tell people, like, right. You know, I went to go see Wicked in Boston and such happened, you know, and I just think that's the coolest thing.
That was my one of my weird dreams was. I had seen the number of shows I've seen, I've lost count. The number of Broadway shows I've lost count. And so it wasn't until I saw Pippin where I was in my very first show with a mistake or where something broke.
Ooh,
or something
what
had
happened.
So we had gotten rush tickets to see Pippin. And this was when it was still the entire, like, Tony Award nominated
cast.
Yeah,
I got to see that cast
Patina,
too.
Patina Miller and everyone. And so all of a sudden, Terrence McNally, fully in character still, music like still playing at its normal speed, he goes, "We will now take a brief intermission until, I don't know, it was like until something is cleaned up or something happens." And like everyone dances and this circus people like still are continuing to do their acrobatics off stage, and how he did it was so just flawless.
Well, that's everyone, the kind of show though,
it was perfect
because it's like a show in a show,
right? So. And so nobody knew that it was real what he was saying. Nobody,
awesome.
Everyone thought it was a line in the show. So everyone still is doing their circus stuff and dancing off stage. And then all of a sudden the Pippin curtain comes down. And this girl sitting next to me goes, "Wait, that something actually happened?" I was like, "I know. I didn't realize it either."
Awesome.
Turns out a bulb broke. And so there was glass on the floor.
Okay. Yeah, they take that stuff super seriously.
Especially when you had, like, circus
dancers
performers.
And absolutely. People that, well, any amount of glass on, I mean,
right.
Anything, like a little sliver
can. You jack
can,
up somebody.
Absolutely.
So that's what had happened. But I was so excited to have, like, my first mishap on Broadway. It took me, like, I don't know, that was, like, 10, 15 years of seeing Broadway shows. And finally, I had a mistake.
Finally. I'm sure it happens more often than we even see or recognize.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
So we were going to talk about Hello Dolly.
Yes.
And the fact that Donna Murphy, love her, is taking over for Bette Midler.
So Bette's on a two-week break, for like a week and a half, something like that.
Okay.
But Donna was already going to be doing it. I think it was like every Sunday matinee or something like that.
Oh.
Starting about a month after the Tony Awards.
Well, that's news to me. I didn't even hear that part.
Yeah. So even once Bette comes back and does it full time, you can see Donna like once
She'll
or twice
standby,
a week.
Or the alternate rather.
Yeah.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
so
Donna
I got
Murphy.
To see. She's wonderful.
hands are
so
gone.
So I got to actually see her on Friday night in Hello Dolly. I did.
Oh, nice.
And she was having so much fun.
I bet.
And the audience was so with her.
Yeah.
Like, she comes out and she got at least a 1 minute ovation. I mean, it was very long,
awesome.
Long screaming and clapping and screaming and clapping because everyone loves Donna. And she just had the most fun on that stage and you could feel it. And she's such a perfect Dolly Levi.
And then you say the bottom line over that.
The bottom line.
So good. So that's our last segment, if you didn't get that.
It's our last segment. And in this segment, we're going to talk about Charles Isherwood.
Yes. So he was one of the critics for the New York Times under Ben Brantley.
Right.
Who was just recently let go after, what, 17 years or something crazy like that. Mm-hmm. But there was a little bit of like
I think
a...
it was 12 years.
There was a... it was a long time. Like a weirdness around it because Ben Brantley was supposed to...
Retire. So the whole reason Charles was told that he was brought on to the New York Times was because they thought Ben Brantley was going to retire.
Mm-hmm.
And so once he... retired, Charles would succeed him at the New York Times for theater criticism. This is very much like a Jay Leno and what's his
Conan
name?
O'Brien.
Conan O'Brien situation because they made this deal without really asking Ben if he was ready to retire. And like when I looked up Ben Brantley's age, like why would he had time.
Yeah.
So I don't really understand that. And so what Charles wanted, he wanted to be at least given, like, the same title so that they would be, like, co-critics. And so what they did was there was a lot of backbiting and maybe Charles was saying some things behind Ben's back. And he was also very frustrated about what had happened and how he was brought on under circumstances that weren't actually true to what was happening at the New York Times. And so he had confided in some friends about it. And you're a theater critic. So who are your friends? Your friends are Broadway producers, right? They're Broadway producers. They're directors. They're most of your friends are going to be people in the theater world. And they met with him and his representative from his union and subsequently fired him that day, let him go.
Wow.
There were a few articles that said, like, you know, he might have had grounds to sue them. Well, he did sue them.
Yeah, he did.
And just this week, he was able to get a settlement. So it's sort of resolved. I will say, like, NYT, like, after they let him go, the next day they posted the job.
Yeah.
The job went to a critic I do like, Jesse Green, but then they gave Jesse everything Charles had asked for. So they really shot themselves in the foot.
Yeah.
They shouldn't. That's just not even. Why? That makes no sense to
me. Yeah.
And so I'm glad he got something from it.
Me too.
The theater community is tiny. So
very tiny.
You better.
You don't want to burn your bridges at all. You don't. Yeah. I mean, it's really difficult. Like you offend one person and you will cut yourself off from a whole sect of people because that one person is friends with a lot. You know, it's a very small community of people.
I mean, it's only a few blocks long, so you can't expect it to be too big, right?
It's true. But even regionally, if you think about it, the entire United States of America, it's still such a small community of people.
It's true.
And we all know each other, and we're all Facebook friends.
Well, that's our episode.
Hey, guys, can you do us a favor? Because
yes,
this was our first intermission episode, but we're going to have lots of other ones kind of mixed in between all of the other full episodes. And we need your input. So let us know if you have heard something that needs to be corrected or if you've got a really great story to tell us about a show that you saw or, you know, standing behind Bette Midler in line at some... some Chipotle in Midtown.
Or the friend of mine who thinks maybe she saw Bette in Rhinebeck.
Oh.
You could always probably email us. I won't out you by name.
Yeah, please do. TGABWay@gmail.com.
Or you can follow us on Twitter at TGA.
B-Way! Gives me life. Also on Facebook at Theater Geeks Anonymous. We love to hear from you. Let us know how we're doing. Not that we're needy or anything, but please let us know.
Yeah. Share, like, follow, and also on iTunes, reviews really will help us
get into that. So rate, review, subscribe.
Yeah.
Yeah, new and noteworthy, because that'll keep us on the top so that other people can see us right away when they're searching for new podcasts to listen to, because I know I follow those like the Bible.
Yeah.
Whenever I'm looking for a new podcast.
Yeah.
thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.
Next time. Bye.
Bye.